Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we have another great show dealing with metaphysics, spirituality, science, and especially tonight, God. Yep, that's what we're going to talk about. I thought it would be good to get more of an understanding of what humans' relationship with God is about. And I thought this would be a good show to do it in, because we've talked about the subject in many different ways. We've had shows somewhat relate, you know, in relationship to God, of course. But I think that it's best to define it in terms of how humans relate to God in comparison to how God necessarily relates to the universe, which is sometimes the way I put it. But I'll do both in today's show, and we'll try to get to some higher levels of understanding, which is the same as saying, hey, let's raise your consciousness a little. And if you wish, you, of course, can call in. You should have the numbers. I'll give one of them out in case you're on phone and don't know it, 877-876-5227 in the U.S. If you don't know the phone number, that I'm going to give it out. It's kind of strange because I don't know how you could get it, but 712-432-0075. What that allows you to do, in case you don't know this, if you're listening online, is you could be anywhere. As long as you can, you have a phone and you can access that phone number I just gave it, you could be listening into the show on your phone. Yeah, and you can even put it on speakerphone while you drive. So you could do a lot of things if you want, and that's more of an options that I like about the present system that we're in. Okay. What do I mean by more understanding our relationship with God? Well, for a lot of people, it's a little vague sometimes, the concept of how someone relates to their Creator and what that relationship is composed of. There are a number of various explanations for this. Some of them I think of as being more anti-God or anti-relationship or both, and we'll talk about those this evening too, and how they're confusing people, because there is a kind of movement on for people who really don't believe in the true nature of God, but they want to, they have an agenda. They want to promote an agenda. It could be political, it could be power or control. It could be sometimes a need for justification of their actions or interactions. And in those situations, unfortunately, there has been an attempt, and sometimes successful, to confuse what God is and what relationships are with God. We'll talk about that tonight, too. So by more understanding, I'm hoping that that we will grow on whatever your understanding is. And if you don't think there is a creator or God, I guess this is still an interesting show, because then this will challenge those ideas you might have as an atheistic person about that concept and why maybe there might be a God. Yeah. And even if you're a hardcore scientist, and say, well, yeah, science doesn't mix with religion. But it really does. It's just a matter of belief and how one chooses to open their minds and hearts to the question of there being a creator. Not necessarily any facts in science that prove or disprove the existence of God. So it's very interesting to think about it in those terms. Okay, let me start by saying this. This is my understandings. These are my understandings of what God is. Some of the reasons, I'm going to give some of the reasons that I think we exist, that all life exists. I'm going to give some of the reasons for God's interactions and our interactions with God. But nothing I say can be all-inclusive. And if any of you have read the textbook I wrote, Life's Hidden Meaning, you know that in there I say at least some, or one, or ten, or whatever, other reasons are these. But there's a vast number that I don't think I or anybody may know about what are God's motives or choices and decisions, because we are not that high on the hierarchy of development of consciousness. Maybe that's a good place to start. What is a human being? Because if we're going to be relating with our Creator, then we need to know who we are, right? And humans are the first of life forms that can recognize, understand, and choose to co-create with some of God's plans and ideas, and consciously do so. We're the first to do that. Animals generally cannot. And certainly plants and minerals are not running around doing that. But even animals are not. So we're like the beginning. We're the infancy of that relationship with our Creator that cannot be conscious on the part of animals, because they're missing the senses, just the awareness of God in most ways and most things on any conscious level. That's why animals aren't running around trying to create themselves into a perfection of God, trying to find God through religion, listening to the show for the purposes of understanding God. They just aren't doing that. And so that is a dead giveaway, that there's obviously a difference. All right. Now, what then, if we are in the infancy, does it mean to go further than that infancy? And here's what I'm going to propose to you. And this may be a little controversial to some. I'm certain it will be controversial to some, actually. But here is my view on the subject. That as you move up the consciousness ladder, beyond the average level of humans, say, on Earth at the present time, and one starts to become closer to God and relates to God more by actually emulating God-like consciousness, God-like abilities, God-like thought, God-like, we'll say, existence. Not being a God, unless you're really far along on that. But certainly as you move beyond the average of humans, those things start taking place. If you move out of being a human, at least into the next kingdom, sometimes called the kingdom of souls, that kingdom has a basis different than the human kingdom in terms of their relationship with God. Let me go through some of those, because I love examples, and this show allows us to have it, because it's a two-hour show, and we have the time, which is always wonderful. Those who are souls, that means who consciously function as souls nearly, if not all, of the time, that's really what we're talking about. And human beings don't do that, by the way. They're not capable. Their capabilities of relating to God are in the following ways. They create new life forms on a regular basis that, in both experimental sense and in a freedom-giving sense, are available to contribute to the growth of life and all the lower kingdoms below human, and to start beginning to have a relationship with God. That kingdom and those beings are humans. So souls are constantly involved with the creation of humans if they are individual human souls. There are some souls, actually quite a few, that are group souls for animals. Now, they create preconceived thought. We call it instincts. For those animals, and they're concerned about the life form and the relationship of that life form with the group soul which is a stand-in representation of God, because the animals, as I already explained, don't have a full consciousness of God. So they can't relate directly to God. They can only relate to this in-between thing, which they do through instincts and some other, we'll call it, basic kinds of thought and communication. And there is an exchange between a group of animals, and sometimes even an individual animal, and its group soul. So this is realistic to talk about it in that way. That's way different than the individual human soul. Even while its incarnate is functioning in a dimension of time and space lower than its existence, where we are right now is one of those, which is the physical dimension, the lowest you could really be in. And even while we're here, our soul is working with hundreds, maybe a thousand, other souls to co-create the next potential incarnate. You didn't know that, I know. But that's really what it's doing. It's way ahead in the future in comparison to where we are. And it's watching, as best as it can, how we are doing. Now, you might say, well, there's a watch direct. Actually, it really only picks up the things we do that are virtuous. And some people aren't doing that much, so the soul's got a lot of idle time as far as communicating with its human, especially while we're physically alive. There's minimal communication. Some people communicate better with their souls by creating more light, more virtue in their life. And those souls are enriched by that, and it helps them, as souls, to communicate with other souls, which is their way of communicating with God. Because as a unit together, they are able to more effectively follow what they understand to be God's plan, and we barely have a clue of most of the time. So they're not clueless, but we are. And it's a fascinating paradigm that I'm giving you right now, because here are these souls, individual human souls, that have just gigantic amounts of changes and creations that they're doing in virtual realities of the future, each changing how their next incarnation might be in relationship to all the other potential souls and their incarnations, for the purpose of following a plan that they are aware of how life in this particular case on Earth, and particularly human life, is best served to grow closer to God and be an example of what that means. This is fascinating as far as I'm concerned. Now, I may be boring some of you. I hope not, because I'm not talking directly about human beings here. I'm talking about the souls. But I think this gives us some perspective, you see. And then if we move beyond the human soul, believe it or not, there's the next stage. You know, the first stage is the human soul, and then the next stage gets into, we'll call it, the hierarchy of souls that are liberated. These are souls that no longer exist in the mental or monastic world, and they function and live in the intuitional, in greater freedom of thought, and they are connected together in their thought much more so. So they share knowledge without having to communicate it through mental concepts. An individual human soul, while it's on the mental world, is very slow in gaining, relatively, in gaining through concepts what the other human souls are experiencing from their humans, who are, and this again is only about virtuous things, and that then is used as new material to do these virtuous scenarios. But, good news, once the soul is liberated and a member, full member of the next kingdom, then those souls, which we sometimes call masters of the angels' wisdom, there's a lot of words that sometimes, the great ones, great teachers, I mean, there's all, you know, people use names for them. And there's an energy part of these beings. Some of them are more energy related. They're called solar angels, and inner guides, and alter, soul, egos, and all kinds of stuff. But all of them are members of this next kingdom, beyond human controlling. Okay. Not directly connected to a human anymore, because they are not creating humans as life forms. What they are doing is they are creating themselves, okay, think about this, simultaneous, because there's no time delay like there is in the mental world, into greater and greater life forms by instantly sharing all knowledge between themselves, even though they maintain complete individuality of creation. So they're not a collective group like a bunch of bees or ants, but they're able to instantly, omnisciently understand each other's thoughts and are able to take those and develop the knowledge in a co-creative basis with each other. And it's it gives them a lot more ability to simultaneously grow. You see, the trapped, we'll call it, bound human soul in the upper mental world is unable to do this. It has to kind of like figure things out and try to make changes. It uses up time. Time is being split because it's not at the highest part of the mental world where time stops being split. And so it's still splitting time where it exists at. And although it's putting more time together than it's splitting, which is not a bad thing, it isn't able to complete the truth process. It doesn't make things that are completely true. And it sometimes is unable to effectively give wisdom in the process. Whereas those liberated souls that have omniscience, they can create love wisdom in every creation they make. That's a very important relationship with God now. A relationship that the human soul trapped in the mental world, higher mental world, doesn't have. Whereas the master now can develop this kind of relationship with God of being one third of what it means to really exist as God. But it takes a while. They have to develop the ability to not only be omniscient, but also to be able to use the omniscience at the maximum level of co-creation. It takes them sometimes a millennium or more of this type of service before they can actually accomplish that. And then they move from what is called the fourth subworld of the Buddhic world, or the intuitional plane, for those of you who know that name better. They move from that place to the very top, eventually, the atomic or most highest level of the intuitional realm, where all the omniscience they have is instantly created into something that is brilliantly new and helpful to being a co-creator with God. It's really fascinating when you think about it, that they're able to do that. That's way beyond what a trapped or mentally bound human soul can do. Way beyond. We're talking about having a much deeper relationship with their creator than the human soul can. Now, I know these are difficult concepts, and if you're saying, you're scratching your head, saying, what did he say? Look, you can re-listen to this. That's the good news. A day or two from now, it'll be up, and you can re-listen to the show so that you can go back over this if it's still confusing you. And you can also write to me. You can call me, and we can talk about it or write about it, because I know these are not easy ideas. And we're really stretching the minds of all of us as we talk about this, because this is so far out there. This is not something we as human beings, much less as human souls, can really grasp. It's difficult to put it all together, because what we're really saying, what I'm saying here, is that one is becoming part of God. But God is a dynamic being that's constantly choosing to grow itself by literally sacrificing its oneness so that others can share in the process, which we call life, can share in the process. but it doesn't lose its existence because of it. And I don't want you to think that's what I'm suggesting. God is not just some vague being. Some Buddhists believe it's a vague being that you can't put your finger on. That's not what I believe at all. That's not even what I'm trying to suggest. Certainly not deistic, which means a God that made something and then left, made like a mechanical universe and left. It's not pantheistic, which is a God that vaguely, that's more like the Hindu or Buddhist model, becomes sort of lost in the givingness of itself to everything in the universe. It's just sort of not there anymore. Just the opposite. Just like we become more individual as we become closer together and closer with God, so God never loses its individuality. It just grows. It grows by the sum of its parts, which is beyond trillions and trillions and trillions of life forms. It's all contributing. So it's a huge, beyond our comprehension number. And so this is the fascinating thing about what I'm describing here. It's something that is really very different than some religions try to espouse. And it's extremely different than some people who try to abuse religions, try to espouse. So here what we're saying, what I'm trying to say, is that each of us can gain some more understanding of a relationship with God by understanding how beings greater and less than us have relationships with God, and what God is maybe in all of this trying to do. We get a glimpse of it in each one of these explanations, I hope. Okay, so you could say, well, wow, what you're saying is kind of interesting, but then what goes on? What goes next? Okay, I'll go next so that you can. And remember, the further out I go on this, the harder it's going to be to keep up with this, because we are getting way beyond what human beings really do. But I'm sure that you, if nothing, are curious to know more. So I explain it as best as I can. There are, again, this hierarchy of consciousness goes considerably beyond what I just described, even though that sounds like pretty far out there. You know, beings, masters, who connect together in omniscience and are able to co-create together at the maximum level eventually. Wow, that's pretty powerful stuff. But beyond that, there comes the ability to use power in a way that is not dark and destructive, and that is balanced with consciousness. That type of power makes a person omnipotent, all-powerful. And it's a gradual process of developing all-powerfulness. Even the lower masters have a small amount of omnipotence they can exercise. But I'm talking about much bigger levels. And how does that affect things? Well, if you're really at that level, and again, that's way beyond where we're talking about humans, those people are starting to relate to God as a creator of a planet, a world. This is a little hard for us to really grasp. So they're starting to learn, it's like the beginnings, of how to make a planet balance itself out in every way, from weather patterns to you name it, all of it working together to help support life and different kinds of life. Some of the life may not even be physical. It may be etheric, which is like electromagnetic, or it might be astral and mental, or it might be mental and beyond. So planets do a lot of different kinds of life creations, and right these days, of course, our scientists are only looking for physical life, and then only in some ways. So it's very limited as far as humans are concerned. But it's very unlimited as far as these great beings. These are very advanced kinds of masters, sometimes called the planetary part or planetary kingdom part of the hierarchy of souls. They're actually even considered beyond souls. And so what are these masters really out to do? What are they connected to doing? Well, they not only are all-knowing and work then to co-create with God, but by being all-powerful at various levels of power, the beginning of it is all-powerful on a mineral stage, a mineral level, then all-powerful on a plant level, eventually on an animal, then on a human. as they become all powerful, they make changes on a planetary scale that changes all of the kingdoms at the same time. You got to make a big understanding. You got to have true omniscience to do this, because if you screw up, you make huge mistakes that will kill all life, possibly. And then whatever you change has to be balanced with all the other parts of the existence of the world. It includes principles in evolution, but goes far beyond that. And it has to do with making a planet so that it will support the plan for life as proposed by beings much higher up the chain, leading all the way to God. And so this is and you get a much greater understanding of what that plan is about when you're dealing with it on a planetary scale. And then there's another kingdom that goes beyond that, that deals with things not on a single planet, but on a whole solar system of planets, and sometimes beyond that. Whoa! And it gets bigger and bigger. It just doesn't stop. I don't want to go too far beyond what I've just said, because I think that's about as much as most people can grasp. But here we're seeing that our relationship with God, first of all, it's endless. You can never catch up with God in a sense, because God's growing at the sum of all of its parts, which are really factoring together. So you have a exponential growth. But nonetheless, at some point, all of us will become as God was at an earlier time. And so we ourselves will become, very, 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 very long time from now, a God, after we go through all these kingdoms of hierarchy. And we'll have our own universe if we choose to do that. That's a kind of interesting idea. And universes don't all have to be like the one we're in, by the way. They can be very different indeed. So, looking how this whole process works, where does it lead back to a human being? Well, the first is to have some appreciation for all that we do not have an understanding of. Today's show is more understanding. It isn't just like, I want to understand our whole relationship with God. Nope, it's not going to happen, because it's too vast for human beings to even know what it's about, much less participate in. What is the part that we can participate in? What we are really trying to do is to learn how to live as souls. Those are the beings that are helping to create us. And we go back to being that soul at the end of each incarnation. And that incarnation is not just while we're physically alive, but also while we're astrally alive, which is the next dimension of time and space, and then lower mentally alive. As we move from the lower mental plane, and we'll call it dying, but it's really not, it's really awakening, we awaken to being our souls. And we realize, in joining back to our souls, that we were in part always there. We just didn't have any awareness, or until we joined back with our soul, any even understanding of what the soul was really about. And that just happens instantly, and it's a wonderful process. Never die. Don't die. The only part of us that really goes away is the part that is subconscious to us. It's called our personality in some quarters. And that part goes away because the only part that goes away of that is the part that doesn't do good, isn't creating virtue. And because it's not creating virtue, that which does not create with God eventually vanishes, disappears. Eventually. Even evil. Although it thinks it can exist forever, it's inevitable it will cease to exist, at least as evil. Because only that which is part of God is permanent. Okay? Now, let me continue on and talk about what our relationship is like, therefore, with our soul, since that's what we're connecting with, and that's really our best understanding of God, but I'm going to put it in terms of God now, and not just in terms of the mechanics of association with the soul and the virtual reality, etc. That's all great stuff, and that's all good to understand and know. But let me tell you what we're really striving for. We are seeking to be able to exist in realms, right where we are right now is the worst of it, the physical realm. We are energy doesn't follow thought very well. As a matter of fact, it almost doesn't follow thought of humans. And because it doesn't follow our thought very well, nor does it follow the thought of souls very well, by the way, the human souls, or group souls for animals or plants, etc., because those souls don't have strong enough thought. That's the reason they can't do a lot of the things that those more advanced masters can. They just can't get the energy to follow it. So the energy is doing something that is, in this realm, much more difficult for us to be able to deal with, and that is it's gravitating towards itself. Some of the energy is doing that. And that energy is producing just a more of itself. It's making a big clump. It tends to make a sphere, as you know, over time. And this also produces a release of energy that is random from the heat that is given off from the gravitation. We would like to take that energy and make it more conducive towards helping us to live in this realm. And not just us, but we also do this, humans do, for the lower kingdom, three lower kingdoms below us. That's animals, plants, and minerals. We help those kingdoms by building our own civilization out of them to not waste the energy that gravity causes and instead to convert it into a process in which the kingdoms get along in a better respect to each other more efficiently and with ourselves. And we are able then to turn this physical environment into a more life-producing environment for ourselves and all of life. This is a good thing. Now, you might say, well, what's that sounds like every, you know, ecological person is trying to say, and people who are, you know, trying to conserve conservationists, et cetera, energy, et cetera. Well, maybe. But our purpose is supposed to be to do this so that we can become souls and become more connected with God. Not so that the lower kingdoms can be in some perfect order put together, but our life is sacrificed in the process or something, and there is no more human being. Because that is getting back to a pantheistic, deistic model of God. You see, it's like we're seeing ourselves as a God that's not true. The real God doesn't do that, and we shouldn't be doing that either. But some people in the environmental community are doing that. They actually think that the Earth, whatever that is, in its fundamental way without humans, is more important than the humans who are inhabiting Earth. Well, that's not makes any sense, because if that's true, then you believe that humans are disposable. They're not. They're, you know, they don't count, maybe a, you know, a flower or a tree or maybe some rodent or something or a cockroach is more important than a human being. And this is confusion. This creates some very bad models. And unfortunately, this is the predominant attitude in some of the environmental circles, especially where people who are called progressives are concerned, because their view of the universe has a more pantheistic view to it. And so this is a problem, because it denies the relationship of humans to God. You see what I'm talking about? If God is a great being who's becoming greater and grows with all of the life that it helps to co-create with, or helps that life to co-create with it, then we should be doing something similar to that rather than saying, well, humans don't really count. You know, it's the plants that count, or it's the trees, or it's the animals. Well, that's a mistake. People who are into animals really big, like that PETA organization, may get that confused sometimes. So that's a problem because they're not seeing the picture in a way which I think is correct. We are here to help all life live together and prosper. But we are also here to make sure we do as well, humans. And it's very important to have a love of humanity in the whole process while we're helping to develop all of the other kingdoms. Because otherwise we're not emulating, nor are we relating with God. And we may be moving towards the dark side, even evil, in the process. So this is a mistake that's easy to make in today's world because it has become, in the last century or so, a popular viewpoint, if not extremely wrong. And we have to be careful about this. Some people want to go back to nature. Let's get rid of all the concrete and the glass buildings and all this stuff. And let's all move in huts together. And, you know, that also, that type of, you know, regression is not a method that God is using. And again, it leads to a lot of problems. But again, there are some people who believe that. There are some religions that follow that. And that's a problem. They get stuck in time. And it's because the relationship with God is not understood well that these things start to take place. Hopefully tonight's show will help all of us to gain a better understanding of this process. Okay, so humans are here to work with the lower kingdoms and make life both more abundant, healthier, and contributing and working together as best as possible. But that includes human especially and as well. If human life is not bettered by the endeavors of human beings in the process, then there's something fundamentally wrong in the process that is being employed. So if you disregard the economy, of humans, which has a great deal to do with how much life expands or doesn't in human terms. And you say, well, don't worry about the economy. That's just some human fictitious thing. All you have to do is spend all the money and make sure animals, plants, and minerals are happy. And the oceans are clean and the air is bright and everything is wonderful, but we'll all be incredibly poor and unable to raise the standard under which we can have choices to further live. Because that's what economy does. By using resources correctly and more efficiently, economy, which is economical, allows us to produce and create at a higher level. So we're cutting down our creativity if we do that. And then we're cutting out our reason for existence to a large extent. I understand some people are going to disagree with what I'm saying, but I'm trying to make the point here because this point is not well understood. And that's what the show is about, is to try to make things understood. Okay, so when we come back, I want to go back into this more and discuss a lot more intricacies of the whole process and where that leads us to, eventually, in understanding our relationship with God. So we will be back in about 2.5 minutes or so from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight we're talking about more understanding our relationship with God. And I hope you heard the first part, because there's a lot of stuff in there that I'll use in this next part to further build some understanding, I hope, in some of those people who are listening. Okay, so human beings have a relationship with God in which we are the foot soldiers, so to speak, of our souls, who don't choose not to come to the lower levels of time and space than where they exist. They exist, just to be very accurate, at the fourth sub-plane of the second sub-plane of the monastic or mental dimension. For those of you who have any idea what I just said, that's great. And they live there because this is the area that provides them the most clear understanding of the good that their incarnates create, and at the same time permits them to do the simultaneously the most amount of co-creation with other souls in a virtual kind of reality together. If they could, and many can't, live at a higher level than that, they would still choose not to while they have incarnations going in the lower realms, because they wouldn't get much from them while those incarnations were down there, because they'd be too high in the mineral world. So they're at the highest level they can actually function in and have communication with us. Although that communication is only when we're creating good things. If we're doing lousy stuff, well, they don't get anything. So why do they send us down there? I mean, why not come themselves, these great beings? And why go through this whole thing of creating life forms? Because the energy is so dense here, as I described. That's the first part of the show now. That it creates an effect called illusion, in which we don't know who we are, what we're doing most of the time, nor what our relationship is with God or our soul. And so we lose our perspective. And that it's worst while we're physically alive. This is where the energy is most difficult to understand. And this energy does not help our senses most of the time operate better. It actually damages the senses. And as it does that, it destroys the longevity of our life. So we are shortest life is while we're physically alive, because this energy is so dense that we're trying to get to follow our thought, and we're trying to use in a physical sense to move around, sometimes electromagnetically as well. We're trying to do all this stuff, but if we don't do it without any without any illusion, we cause damage to our senses, and almost all the time we function with illusion. So we damage our senses, which only makes us have more illusion. And it's sort of an endless process of diminishing our abilities. For the first 28 years or so, our senses are kind of balanced out by the amount of information that we get, so we keep growing. That's good news. But then, after 28, unless we really continue to choose to make a life that is more virtuous than not, and really work on trying to get the information out of illusion into accurate information that then becomes good knowledge, the senses start to diminish. And we've got about 14 years or so before the diminishment of the senses is so great that we actually just permanently start losing the ability to create the maximum amount of virtue that we could have at an earlier age. That's about 42 years old that starts to happen. And so you got this process going on of trying to keep your sense up, right? Senses, the chakras. Keep your body alive, because as the senses diminish, you lose your health and your stamina and your everything. And get accurate information that we change into accurate knowledge that we then build ourself with, our consciousness, become more conscious, and then use on a conscious level to co-create with our Creator. This is the process we're trying to go through while we're physically alive, and our soul, if it came here, would be no different than us and would be caught in the same problem, but then it would be damaged. And so going back to its own realm, it would have some significant harm to itself, and it can't afford that. A couple lifetimes like that, and it wouldn't even exist. It would die. So it has to make us, and we're kind of somewhat expendable. Remember, our consciousness doesn't die. But a part of us that is our personality, which is really more of an energy being than it is a conscious being, the self that it works through is its consciousness. But that's the best we can do. We have to have energy, an energy being, to deal with this violent, very difficult energy that is here, because nothing else would be tough enough to be able to handle the destruction of this very dense energy that is all around us in this realm. So this is the reason we have a personality. It's the reason it's mostly an energy rather than a conscious being. It works with a conscious part of ourselves, which is the self itself. And it is, it's a kind of redundant thing. And it is subservient, strangely, to the personality. The personality is actually in control of how the self functions, and it can screw things up. Sometimes selves end up in a battle with their own personality. And so, I mean, it's very interesting. You know, this confusion is caused by the need to create a human being. Otherwise, life can't continue to grow. We are an absolute necessity and the creation of life. Without human beings on a planet, eventually all life lower than human would die. Because evolution creates a lot of forces. It's based upon a densely energy model. And it wears out life. Because only the strongest survive, as you know. And that gets rid of a lot of the nuances in the weakness. If you don't keep life going beyond the evolutionary model, if you don't have a spiritual model working with it, evolution always ends up with lower and lower diversity and finally no life at all. I know it's hard to understand that, but even a good evolutionist knows that that's what happens. And it does not continue indefinitely. It eventually will finish itself off. And it's a strange model because it doesn't have the balance of spiritual in it. But, of course, the balance is here. It's in human form. It's in souls, the group souls, and it's in individual human souls as well. And that balances out this system that is the more mechanical energy side. It's the power side of things. And we need to learn how to use that in a way that is beneficial for all of the lower kingdoms and ourselves at the same time. It can't be harmful to ourselves, but at the same time, if we destroy the lower kingdoms, we will retard ourselves because our civilization will go backwards, and eventually we ourselves will die out. So this is a very interesting process. Human beings, therefore, are participating in a great experiment in trying to develop life at the most fringe levels, the lowest, densest, most difficult levels. That's where humans are functioning while they're physically alive. But it's also a great challenge. And one of the relationships we have with our Creator, with God, is that we can know that we are participating in a great challenge that is greatly appreciated by all those beyond us in life and consciousness, because they know and God knows that what we're doing is some of the hardest, most difficult, challenging work you can do. That's right. And there's an appreciation for that. Some people call it grace, because we're given wide, we'll say, parameters where we can make terrible errors and mistakes and still get back to being a soul and do a fine job at that in that respect, even though we screwed up while we were physically and sometimes astrally and even lower mentally, some of the time, alive. Yeah. Now, the astral world is not nearly as dense an energy as the physical. Of course, there's the etheric, electromagnetic between anyway. But it's not nearly as dense, and so it's much easier for us to exist there, and there's less illusion. There's still plenty, but there's less. Whereas in the physical world, it's almost impossible to exist in the physical world without some level of illusion being present, if you're human at all. So here is the challenge, but we get help, because one of the relationships we have with God is that God appreciates, as well as all higher life forms appreciate, the tremendous sacrifices and the great consternation and problems that we face as human beings while living physically, particularly, and astrally to some extent. So this is available to us, and we can tap into it. We can tap into it by doing a number of, we'll say, meditative methods to communicate with these higher beings and with God. And we can also do it through faith and prayer, not necessarily for ourselves, but for the work that we are here doing and all the life that we are trying to develop and bring about to a higher level. So we have this as an option, and it's a great alternative for us, because otherwise, if we exclude it, this is a place that will just grind you down into nothingness. No matter what you believe in terms of science and the ability to control the universe around us and everything else, we will eventually, one would eventually, become ground down by the sheer monumental forces that are against us all the time and that we are in illusion about. So if we don't recognize this and then turn to God for help, no matter how much we think we got our act together, we will eventually find ourselves in severe crisis. It's only because there is help from all these higher sources that we are able to make it through in a really, we'll say, more positive direction. So having spiritual faith is critical to being successful in the physical world. And I know that a lot of people who are atheists may disagree with that. They just haven't hit the wall yet. And they will someday. Now, the interesting thing about this is it is possible, because of karma, that a person can do exceptionally well in one lifetime and then the next one really not find what I'm talking about, a spiritual foundation, because of maybe some odd circumstances, or they just choose that, and yet not have the very worst things happen to them until very late in life in the physical world, or sometimes until they get to the astral world. That happens rarely. More often, people go through life thinking they're skating, oh, I got lots of money, I got this, I got that, and then they hit the wall. And the wall can only be overcome through spiritual communication and having a relationship with God and all higher forms of life beyond human. It's all connected. And so if we're not willing to do that, we're making our life a hell at some point in the future. If it isn't already, it will become one. Now, when do you need to know this by? Usually by age 42. You've heard of midlife crisis? Well, this is probably the foundation of it, truly. Why 42? Because the senses start diminishing to the point after that age that you start losing too much of the meaning of existence as you get older. That makes the inevitability of the wall and having a problem or problems more likely. That still doesn't mean you can't change it around, but you're just going to lose some meaning in life as the process continues. Okay, so what I'm saying is having more of an understanding of our relationship with God is an absolute necessity to gain enough meaning in life and to have enough of the life not become a torture and a terror to be able to tolerate it and survive and prosper. And I don't mean prospering in a physical sense materially only, although that could be some of it. I'm talking about in a total sense. Now, how many people actually come to this conclusion? Not everybody. And the ones who don't become lost. They're around us. We can see them. If you yourself are finding yourself lost, this is a good show to be re-listening to and thinking about. Because this is an ingredient for how to make a change that will make a difference in your life. All right. What else, then, is there to understanding our relationship with God? Well, the beginning is to first become cognizant of the difficulties that I just went over. But the next is to be able to discern them in groupings and be able to deal with them in ways that are both loving and wise and that produce here in the physical world a soul-like being rather than the typical, we'll say, relatively undeveloped and oftentimes suffering human being. So that's what we're aiming for. That's what we'll try to focus on for the rest of the show. I'm going to give you a little bit of a rest right now, just something to ease your minds about. And if you can, allow this to kind of percolate. And I just want to mention that a week or two ago, I mentioned I went to get some massages from a massage therapist. And I found this particular person to really be helpful. Some of you will think I'm doing a commercial for pay or something. I'm not. No one's paying me, and I'm not getting a swap out or something. I'm just telling you that this particular individual, her name is Amy Better. She's a licensed massage therapist. I thought she did a great job. And so I'm just giving her a little help along the way and telling you how you can reach her if you're anywhere in the Phoenix metropolitan area. Now, a lot of you aren't, and I know that. That's okay. But maybe you're going to visit. Who knows? Or maybe you know somebody who is here. You can just let them know about it. So you can reach her over at her. I'll give you her phone number, 480-292-0847, if you call that number. You can talk with Amy and see if you would like to get a massage from her. I found that it was really helpful for me. And one of the things I find that happens is with all the forces that I talked about a few minutes ago is that it puts a lot of stresses on my physical body. And sometimes that causes me to have structural and muscle tensions and problems that the massage really helps with. And she's good. She's actually quite good at what she does. So you might give her a call sometime and see if, and let her know that, you know, you heard about it here. I'm sure she'll appreciate that. And so also, if you have a loan problem, and it seems like everybody's having loan problems these days on their homes, you might check out the Green Loans for Energy Efficiency from Kavita over at Nova Home Loans. Now, if you're in this area, I noticed that Nova Home Loans they've been advertising on television, which is interesting because they weren't when I first started talking about this. And you can reach her at 480-430-6911 and just tell her that you need to change your present loan structure and see if she can help you. One of the ways that you might be able to get by the being underwater problem, if those of you who are underwater and probably know what I'm talking about, where your house is worth less than what you owe on it, basically. And even less of what you can get a loan on it for. That's the most important thing, and that's the problem, because then you can't get out of it. Well, if you choose to make it more energy efficient, in some circumstances, you can actually get a better loan-to-value, which allows you to then be able to refinance your house where normally you couldn't. So you might want to be talking to her about that, the green loans for energy efficiency, because you can refinance at a better loan-to-value ratio than you could otherwise. And they can wrap the energy savings part into the loan. So you actually save money in the process on your electric bills. That is pretty cool stuff. And if you didn't know, we still have some Soul Balance. This is a great product for dealing with the immune system and helping people to balance out the chakras and both the major ones and the minor ones. So it's a great, tremendous product. And if you want to know more about it, you can call 602-472-5127. And that's Life Balance Association. And you can talk to someone who will tell you about that. We still are selling Ideal Cell Sorption Resveratrol with Antiox 20, that's a special series of ingredients that helps the product to last, because most resveratrol does not. And so you think you're buying something that may not be of any value. You still can get it at the introductory price, which is a lot less than what it would be normally. $49.95 a bottle, and that will last you for a while because you take a couple of these pills a day. And you can also get it in a VF formula for dogs or cats, which just helps them to live longer and healthier lives in general. And you can call Forever Young Products, and that's 800-777-7850. You can go to foreveryoungproducts.com, and you can buy it there as well. Okay, so hopefully you're a little more relaxed now. All that stuff I was talking about has kind of settled, and let's continue on. What are the ways that we can have a better relationship with God and understand what that means? And let me go through some things that might be of some assistance. The first is to recognize, as I already said, that there is a great deal of help through spiritual means, much more than we all recognize. And the most help can be gathered from doing the following suggestion, which is the most difficult thing I'm going to probably mention this evening, and that is to maintain a state of humility. What is humility? Humility is a place in your consciousness where you're more focused on truth and the thoughts and ideas of others than you are of yourself. It's the opposite of being selfish or self-focused. When we are humble, when we have humility, we relish to find all the mistakes we are making in our thinking. And this lowers the impact of the dense energy around us as it moves through our centers, because it encounters much less resistance from us. We're not fighting the movement of energy, nor are we fighting other people's thought. And the results are that our senses, or nor are we fighting their feelings either, by the way, and our senses become less damaged minute by minute as we do that. That lowers the amount of harm we do to ourselves by being humble. So if you can get to a state of humility and exist in that state, you could live a lot longer with a lot more accurate information coming in and being able to create a lot more knowledge that is truthful and adds and contributes to truth and gives you the chance to be giving of wisdom to others, which is soul-like. And you start living more like a soul while you're here. All of the negative things I talked about earlier reduce. So the state of humility is the most important thing a person can do. It's the most important way you can get to know your own soul and get to know God. How hard is that to do? Very. Why? Because this personality we got, that is more of an energy being than it is even of a conscious being, wants to be in control and is threatened by anything that it doesn't understand or doesn't have prior knowledge about that isn't in contradiction. So it doesn't cooperate. And it gets into a battle with the conscious part of ourselves, the self itself, and we end up with sometimes not moving ahead in the process. Now, what are some of the things that we can do about that? That's a real difficult problem because part of us doesn't want to be humble. The answer to this is usually to cooperatively work with other people. That's what a spiritual group really is about. It isn't everybody thinking the same. It's actually each person helping the other people to think independently and creatively. But the most important part about it is to be humble and have humility. So you need to be around other people who are trying to do something similar or the same thing. because then each of you can help the other to develop humility. It's much easier to do it with other people because you're not so threatened by the things that they are, and vice versa. Now, sometimes you do have common things, and that's a problem. But that's why if you have more people around, the better off you are, because someone may not, and then they can help. And you've got to be somewhat insistent in helping someone to be humble. You've got to say, if you don't have humility, you are hurting yourself. And I greatly care about you hurting yourself. It makes a difference. Because we all need each other. And we need each other to work together rather than apart. Each contributes individually and uniquely and creatively. But we need each other. And without each other, we will gain only more in egotism and eventually arrogance. So when people separate themselves from everyone else and refuse to work together, they usually move towards arrogance. And that's a terrible state because in that state, the senses are going to tremendously diminish over time, especially the mental senses. Yes, there are senses in the mental body, they diminish. And our ability to hear and understand other people's thought just literally goes away. But worse than that, we also become, at the same time, unloving. Because we're not willing to give to others because we don't see them any longer as being important to us because of the great illusion that we have that separates us from everyone else. We no longer have the ability to be emotionally, or we'll call it astrally, inclusive, because we see others as objects rather than as sentient and also great beings who are here to do great work. That makes us very small. It cuts down our meaning in life, and it tremendously increases our loneliness. No one is more lonely than the arrogant people. They try to hide it, but that's what they get from it. Okay, so this would put us a lot closer to understanding God if we could maintain humility. And it's best to try to do this with others because it's so difficult to do it alone. And in today's world, it may be virtually impossible for most humans to do it alone. I know a lot of people say, well, I don't want to have to be around and deal with everybody else. And all this. It's easier. It isn't that you're giving up something. It's actually easier. But you don't understand that it's easier, because you don't see the tremendous losses that happen through the egotism and arrogance. Humility. That's the ticket. That's the number one thing. If you can't remember anything else, then remember humility. That's how you know a soul. That's how you become a soul. It's through humility. Okay, what else? Well, if you can get past that, and that's a biggie, there's many, many other options that are available to have more of an understanding relationship with God. One of the things to be concerned about, and I suggest this in a kind of, again, humble way, is that for every one of us humans that are succeeding, there's dozens, if not hundreds, that are failing. So there's not an equality, and we shouldn't think that we can depend that much on others. If you have that misguided understanding, even though I suggested we work with others, but you have to find those, then you are in for a big letdown and possibly become jaded and even reject much of what I'm saying this evening. So the first is to accept that there are far more failures on Earth right now than there are successes in this whole model of understanding our relationship with God and building upon it on a conscious level. There's tons of people that belong to religions and go faithfully, so to speak. However, in that process, unfortunately at this time, not very many are really gaining the kind of consciousness or understanding that would improve significantly their level of functioning with their Creator. They, around the edges, might do a few more virtuous things, mostly at a more personal than soul level. I'll explain that in a little bit. But they do that, but unfortunately, it doesn't really move them much ahead, even though they may be following the instructions, say, of a preacher or a pastor. Or what. They, unfortunately, are not gaining that much, because most modern-day religions, if this wasn't even always true, do not attempt to get people to live spiritual lives. They try to get, usually, people to do some good, more spiritual or virtuous deeds. And usually on a personal, again, I will explain that in a few minutes, level, sometimes often involving certain types of charity for a limited period of time, or a limited amount of time and energy, which is also a name for money. So that may have a limited amount of money that they give as well, tithe or whatever. And all of that together does not gain the kind of understanding I'm trying to help people to get tonight in this show. It may make a difference for some people, for sure. And if that's what you're doing, and you're okay with that, that's fine. I mean, I'm not here to say, well, you've got to change. No. But I'm offering better alternatives, I hope, to that prospect. Now, let's talk about the difference between personal giving and charity and giving as a soul. Personal giving, which is what is touted usually in most religious forms, is about giving people things that you, and sometimes they, say they need. They may make us feel better, and they usually involve some elements of empathy, which is good. It's good to use empathy. Soul giving requires a different kind of empathy. I call it super empathy, where you can understand how to help somebody to become more wisely giving themselves rather than just giving them something. Or maybe only helping them to give unwisely, which would be like, join me in this charity drive or something. But it doesn't necessarily help them to become more wisely giving themselves. You see, souls do that. That's what they're really focused on. And sometimes they deliberately don't give people what they want, because what people want may be selfish. It may be superficial. It may encourage them to not find a better relationship with God, to not co-create with God much, but rather to try to look better to themselves or others, to try to feel better about themselves to others, or maybe to overcome some level of guilt. All those are not what souls do. Souls don't experience guilt, because whenever they or even an incarnate has done something wrong, although they would only be able to extrapolate if the incarnate did it wrong, they, instead of being concerned about how that affects them, they are only concerned about how the wrong needs to be righted because of its effect on others, and then how others can be brought to the level where they do the same. This is what souls do. Now, many of us feel guilty on occasion, and therefore we should be aware that the guilt is a sign that we're not functioning as a soul. It's a weird thing, I know. Most people think guilt is great. Yeah, I felt guilty, so I changed. Well, guilt is still a self-focused form of emotion. Rather than that, it's better to replace the guilt with soul love. Soul love means that you love others so much that you don't need to feel bad to want to give to them. You don't need to feel fearful that there's some reprisal or punitive action. You don't need to feel just, we'll say, miserable because you sense their pain in an empathic sense. That's not bad, but the much better is you sense how you can help them to overcome whatever pain you may have caused or any other one else so that they become a soul themselves. That's really the better answer. Now, I know that this may be counterintuitive to some people, but if you want to have more of an understanding of God and how you can relate with God, then you've got to give up that aspect of it because it will stand in your way. It will prevent you from moving ahead. All right. I hope that kind of makes some sense, but I'm not so sure that everybody's going to agree with it. There's some religions that, of course, rely very heavily upon the aspect of guilt. And unfortunately, it becomes inbred and difficult to shake for some people. And it will definitely interfere in these ideas I'm promoting tonight. What else can we do? Well, let me suggest this. One of the illusions that's so strong in the physical world is the illusion of material existence. In other words, it's important for us to have things because that's what keeps us alive. And if we don't have things, we can't stay alive. Well, things are important because they help us to be creative. We already talked about that earlier. And they do have values. I don't want you to throw out everything. But the issue about life itself is not so much based upon things as it is in being creative with the things that we have. Whatever material things you decide that you want in your life, you need to make sure, and this is the difficult part, that those things are used as creatively as possible to be of service to others as souls, so that they can go on and be of service. And that's the difficult trick. Most people collect material things for the sake of having them, rather than for the sake of using them to co-create with their creator. Sometimes that use may be even giving them away. But most of the time, it's in having them to create with. If you're using them to create with, you'll keep them and they'll be very useful. But if you're not using them to create with, each physical thing that you don't use as a creative element will be a form of destruction to your own centers and eventually destruction to the thing itself and harmful to the meaning in your own life. Wow. That's a biggie. I wonder how many of you ever thought of that that way. And that stands in our understanding and having a relationship with God. We have to gain that new sense of creation and co-creation with the things that we have. Most people don't see it that way because the personality believes the opposite. It believes that things in themselves, as things, are what contribute to its ability to control its life and others and to maintain its life. This is absolutely incorrect. It actually is anti-life. It eventually is destructive to the person to do it. I know that's very hard to understand. Especially when people are looking to get a nicer house and have nicer things in it, and they don't intend on using it to create anything. They just want to have it. That's a very, very difficult place to come from and change. Okay. I hope that made some sense to you. I mean, I could go into further explanation, but I'd like to move on and go into even more of the areas in which we can have a greater understanding in our relationship with God. One of the things I suggest is reading. Now, education and reading, and listening to a show like this, by the way, as well, is a way to really shake ourselves out as far as both the humility aspect and also in the ability to have an open mind. The more important element is not to have a lot of facts that you can expound or even have a lot of information about how the universe works. Most important is the ability to be able to take the knowledge that you have and build on it and connect it to new things in your life, so that others are helped or served in some fashion. This is done when we choose to educate ourselves for that purpose. So the motive in our education is just as important as the means. If you were to, say, take a very intensive course in, say, spirituality, and wanted to really learn everything there is to know about metaphysics and some of the things that I teach. But the motive for doing that was only to make yourself look like you're a spiritual person and to make yourself feel better because you have some better understanding of how the universe works and to make yourself feel special because you have knowledge that other people don't have. That's toxic. That isn't going to get you closer to God. It's going to move you further away. It'll become more difficult to have humility in that position. And at the same time, the knowledge that you're having is retained knowledge. Just like retained energy in the centers, which also will get retained, you start wearing out your bodies and your brain by doing that. Some people literally destroy their brains by retaining the knowledge, even though it's spiritual and metaphysical. They may read all of the great books on different metaphysical and spiritual subjects, be able to even speak about them with great authority and even repeat what they say. But if they are not using this education, this knowledge, to help change their life and the lives of others, and to co-create, be virtuous, create virtue in their life, and help others to do the same, that education becomes destructive. So the education I'm talking about is an education that is then used inclusively. Everything you learn in one day should be carried out immediately, that day and the next, in some new actions of being virtuous. Don't have idle knowledge. Don't have idle information. And especially don't have it and then try to espouse it to others like you are some special person. And I speak about that from the standpoint of someone who is obviously trying to teach. The best teachers are the teachers who don't hang on their own thoughts and believe that they have the only answers and the best ideas. Best teachers are always challenging whatever they understand or know, and they use it continuously to help others to better understand. They're spending most of their time doing that rather than accumulating more information. Although they will certainly study and learn new things. I don't want you to think they don't. But nonetheless, every time you learn something, it's just like a material thing you have to create with it, or it becomes an obstacle rather than a means of being connected to your soul. I'm really teaching about living as a soul while we're physically alive. as we do all the things I'm saying so far, and more will come, we are getting closer to God. Our expansion of consciousness is becoming connected with our virtuous life and service. The two become one. And instead of talking about either in a separate form, one is doing one and the other virtually simultaneously most of the time. That's what your aim should be. That's what your goal should be in changing the very practices in the way that you live. Okay, let's move on to some relationship issues. If we're going to understand our relationship with God, we have to have right relationships with people and animals, even plants, everything around us. One of the ways that we can judge the relationships we're having is by whether we are creating beauty in the ways that we relate. What is beauty? This is a complicated, seemingly, concept. But if your relationships build beauty, every time someone comes in contact with you, they become more aware in some way. And that's how you can judge whether you're creating beauty or not. If they are less aware, or if they're no more aware, you have not created a beautiful relationship with that person or thing. Now you can say, well, how does a plant become more aware? Well, the plant is developing an awareness, but on a group conscious level, not on an individual level. So you're helping the group soul and certain energy beings called devas and other things that are working with the individual plants to help them to grow. So yes, if you create beauty out of plants, then those plants are benefited. You are benefited, and all other things that come in contact with them are benefited by improved senses. The definition of beauty is that the energy that you are putting out makes other people's senses improved when they sense the energy that you're working with in some form, of course. That's the definition of beauty. So you want your relationships to be beautiful, but there are also beauties that go way beyond the physical. Beautiful relationships that are astral or emotional, as some people would refer to it. Astral relationships involve feelings. Beautiful feelings are feelings that help that person and all other people that come in contact with them and you to sense better, including, and most importantly, their astral senses. So the feelings they have come through clearer, more correct, and less directed only towards themselves. And hopefully, eventually, the feelings can be directed outward, away from themselves, so that others can benefit at the same time. This kind of beauty is very difficult to do because we tend to be emotionally selfish while we are physically and sometimes while we're astrally alive. And this is a great challenge because to create the beauty, what we need to be aware of is whether we are creating feelings in others and ourselves that are feelings of God. What are feelings of God? They are the virtuous feelings. They are the feelings of joy and bliss. They are also the feelings of, some people would call it, happiness and pleasure, but they have to be connected to something that goes beyond the individual's experience. So if a person only experiences pleasure in themselves, and they're not seeking to allow others to have as great or greater an experience than that simultaneously and also focused towards each other's, then it is a selfish pleasure. And a selfish pleasure soon becomes boring and useless, and it damages the senses. This is complicated. If we're going to make beautiful senses, all the feelings a person has are shared and helped with the giving and inclusiveness of other people's feelings at the same time. And they cannot experience the goodness of the feelings unless they simultaneously are attempting to ensure that others are experiencing more of these same things. That's the concept of beauty and feelings. And it's difficult. It's difficult to achieve, even with a few people, very difficult to achieve as the numbers increase. It becomes also incumbent upon us to recognize when somebody's feelings are so bad that we may not be able to make a shift or change for them. And no matter how beautiful our approach may be, they may choose to ignore it. That is one of the perspectives that's part of the human experience, in that human beings have the right to be self-destructive, and some are. That doesn't mean we just ignore those people, but it does mean we don't necessarily expend all the time and energy we have in trying to change someone who doesn't want to change. And we need to be aware of those people. The wisdom of giving is to give what people need to become better givers in wise ways themselves. Those who choose to be self-focused all the time are not going to become better wise givers, so giving anything to them may be the wrong thing, other than letting them know that you're not going to give to them because of where they're coming from. So you shouldn't ignore them completely. You should let them know why it is you're responding to them in the way that you are. That's a worthwhile part of the whole experience. Okay, let's move on. What about in a monastic or mental way? How is it that we can create beauty in the minds of others, the mental minds of others? Well, here the issue becomes one of the sharing of great thoughts and ideas with others in ways that helps them to want to continue in an open-minded way to share with still further others. It requires thoughtful, open-minded, level-headed teaching. It requires a sense of awe about each person's individual ideas and thoughts, and a desire to be open to someone having something different as an idea, even though we may not care for it. Sometimes the great beauty of an idea is not that we find the idea itself so beautiful, as it is that someone went through a great deal of effort, even if we don't think their idea is the greatest, to create it. Because remember, the co-creation element tells us at least that person, at least the others that are doing this, are making some attempts that might get them closer to God. And that should be some of the things we relish in, even when people don't necessarily, in return to us, create beautiful ideas. We can appreciate at least that they are attempting to create some ideas. What scares me the most is the people who are creating no ideas. Those are the ones I know can't be getting any closer to the Creator. And that's something I usually try to get people to change about. Okay, what else can we do to get closer to God? This will probably be the last thing I'll be able to cover in tonight's show. Probably the most the most, let's say, special thing a person can do is to look inside themselves and reach for what is special about them in relationship to others, and what is it that they have to contribute that others are not yet contributing in whatever endeavor or whatever existence they're in at the moment. That is a big deal, because every human being, I don't care what or who they are, came here with a special mission, a special whatever. Even if they were born virtually brain dead, they are here to contribute something. Maybe it's to all the caretakers that will take care of them and keep them alone. Maybe it's in their innocence and inability to function. Those are the extreme examples, of course. But for the rest of us, we all came here with something special. And the recognition of the specialness in ourselves allows us to also recognize the specialness in others, and to recognize that this individual specialness is what the Creator relishes most about us. Our soul gets a tremendous joy to see us discover the gifts that were given to us, and to use them in ways that, all the ways that I've talked about tonight, there's a lot of them, I know, I went through a lot of stuff, all of those ways, while we're both physically and astrally and lower mentally alive, but mostly physically and astrally, that's where it's so difficult. And right now, I'm talking to you in the physical world, this is where the test is really at. This is where we can make a huge difference to find the specialness. I am amazed at how many people who are in their 30s and sometimes 40s and beyond have not found that specialness in themselves. If you don't find it, you are in trouble. And you need to find it. And the way best to find it is to do experiments in which you challenge your abilities, challenge your thoughts, challenge everything there is about what abilities and what makes you who you are. Each challenge will reveal more of your specialness and get you closer to finding that part of you that was given to you, as sometimes referred to as the spark of light from your soul, so that you can discover the greatest joy of being who you are and how that relates to God. And remember, you can't completely find it unless you're willing to help others to find what they have as their specialness. And you can't exercise it unless you're helping others to exercise theirs. And you can't do it unless you're all doing it somewhat inclusively and together. Those are the models that I hope I'm making and giving to you tonight, so that you will find a true greater meaning in life and having much greater of an understanding in your relationship to God. If you think this has made some sense, then give it a shot. Re-listen to tonight's show, because there's a lot of information, I know, and some of it may have slipped by, because it's maybe a couple hours worth of this much stuff. It's a lot to get into. We are running out of time for right now. I want to thank you all for listening tonight, and to realize that we're all on this journey of understanding our relationship to God together. Until next week, this has been Niles McFlowen for Why Life Is. you know what? My engineer just told me that I was looking at the clock that I have a mic cord that is hiding the middle number on the clock. I thought it said 7:55, and it actually says 7:45. That shows you there's an interesting mistake. So let me go on. I'm going to go on. I got another almost 10 minutes. It's a good thing I asked him if I hit the time. He said, "No, you're 10 minutes early." I said, "Oh my God, 10 minutes early. Okay, that gives me more time to talk about more stuff." And you know me, if I've got 10 minutes, I'll just keep going. So here I go. I got to kind of rewind where I was at. Okay, so we were talking about being special. Specialness has with it some other incumbencies that come with it. It is incumbent upon us to not only discover the specialness that our soul gives us, but then to develop it even further. And if we're going to maximize our life, then the development of the specialness requires spiritual discipline. Now, you've heard me talk about that before. And I didn't even know I was going to be able to get into this tonight, so this is terrific. Okay. Spiritual discipline is the only means that I know of that will take the specialness of what we have and build it into something even far greater. So each time that we discover one of these special issues about ourselves, we can magnify them. We can improve them, and we can grow them by doing the following. There are seven major senses. You know what they are, I hope. But I know I'm not going to go through them right now. I really wouldn't have enough time to do that. But you can take each one of these senses, and you can, using the specialness you already know that you have, you can focus in on one sense at a time, and try to improve the information that is coming through that one sense and make it into a much, much greater, we'll say, resource of accurate information. The way that you do this is that you are looking at the information of the sense while you're disciplining yourself to see how much it is being integrated into full and complete knowledge. And if it isn't being integrated into full and complete knowledge, then you know that it's being clogged and wasted in the center. This is how spiritual discipline works. How much can I apply myself to make a change in the information that I am receiving so that that information can be converted into knowledge? And it has to be full and complete knowledge. How do I know it's full and complete? I can give it to others wisely without there being some contradiction or problem or misunderstanding on their part and on my own. This is done sense by sense. And the best thing is to switch senses every so often. First I do it in what I'm visually seeing. Then I do it on what I'm hearing. Then I'm doing it on what I'm touching and smelling, etc. And when you get to the senses that involve God, which is the heart and crown chakra, you're doing it in a more global sense, in how much are you gaining and how much are the other people gaining an understanding of God, while you then look for how much you are co-creating God and how much you're helping them to co-create. That's using both the spiritual senses together, the heart and crown chakra. If you apply that, then the spark that makes you special grows. It grows enormously. It grows from a relatively narrow gift that was given to you by your soul to a much larger flame or bright light that could be 100 or 1,000 times greater, so that other people now can see so much more and can be helped so much more by this specialness that you are. Everybody that does this is actually also connecting themselves, because they're using the two spiritual senses, with God in a much greater way. That connection is so much greater because it's conscious. It's not just happening because you're following some rote method. but it's happening because you're directing the show from yourself. And that part of us that I talked about earlier, that personality that gets in the way of things, that part is now going to become more able to loosen its need for control, because it sees that the conscious part of us, our self, is growing into this greater or higher self that is becoming so much more interesting and so much more special that it doesn't have to, the personality doesn't have to worry about losing control. It doesn't have to worry about hurting itself and falling into a position in which it is becoming or forcing itself to not respond in becoming selfish. This is a critical element of spiritual discipline, is it actually brings the personality into alignment with the soul. The two start fusing together, and the personality actually no longer functions just as a subconscious being. It actually becomes a fully conscious being, and it literally becomes an extension of the higher and lower self together. This is the amazing thing that we can do to have a closer relationship with God. And boy, am I glad I got these extra 10 minutes. This is fantastic. So this is kind of like the gift that by maybe using some of my special gifts, suddenly I got the 10 minutes just out of nowhere, all because the cord is hanging right in front of the middle number. Let me continue on. If we want to challenge ourselves even further, as I was saying, challenging yourself is part of the process. The greatest challenges we can make are from spiritually disciplining ourselves with others and applying it along a mission. So once you get to the point where you have practiced spiritual discipline, I realize I'm going way too fast about this, but I'm trying to stick it all in here. Then the next step is to apply it to at least one mission or more. What is a mission? A mission is part of the plan of God, and you know it is. You have to know it is in order for it to be truly a spiritual mission. When you are on or are doing a spiritual mission, you're using all of your special parts of yourself that have to have been further developed through spiritual discipline, and you're using them usually with more than two or more other people in what we'll call a spiritual context group. And the mission is going to be part of what your overall soul's mission is. It's also going to be part of the mission for the planet you're on, which is Earth in this case, and for God. It really gives you a totally different reason for existing. And it makes you much more tenacious and unfearful about doing really great things, but sometimes the challenges are beyond belief. You may be up against evil sometimes. You may be up against time, because the time, although if you're doing all these things correctly, you have much more time, but you're slowed down by all the mistakes of those around you. And so you're fighting against the time that the others are actually involved in. That's a real secret and difficult thing to overcome. But you'll learn how to do it if you keep the mission in mind. It's the mission that allows you to achieve that result, to overcome the restrictions of time. I wish I could go deeper into that, because now I opened up the can and I can't really get it closed in time. All right, so I'm out of time. I want to thank you for coming back and listening. If you didn't hang up or whatever, we were only off the air for a few seconds. Maybe I didn't lose everybody. Okay, until next week, again, for the second time, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.